Okay, there's a famous question which has bothered a lot of people. To the extent that, I don't have it on this page, but Maharal and others said, okay, the famous question that bothered Rishonim and Achronim and Gaonim even throughout the generations is, what did the Torah say? If you keep the Torah, well, you get rain and flocks and, you know, health, then you won't get diseases and etc. and peace and all kinds of wonderful things that we'd all love. Right? And if you violate the Torah, Chas V'Shalom, then it talks about all the opposite physical things of war and pestilence and plague and famine and drought, etc. But it doesn't say anything about the fact that the Iker, this world, is a prosdor of Ne'olo Abba, Haskanatsko prosdor, right? It's such an Iker of our Masorah that this world's only the prosdor and the Iker is Olam Haba, and the Iker reward and punishment is in the next world. Why is that conspicuously missing from the Torah? Even in the whole Tanakh, it's barely mentioned. You know, you have, the latest parts of Tanakh. You know, then it gets impressed, the Neil says before, Shrabim, Bisheni, Afar, Yikitzon, etc. But you get very few places in all Tanakh, and certainly in the Chumash. Like, it's totally all you get in the Tocha, and everything is this world. You know, Alpidrush in the Dover Self, Eleman Yitzalag, or after Yama, fine, Alpidrush is there. But in the Pshuta Shal Mikra, why is it left out? And this led, the Maral points out, I didn't bring the question, just the answers in the sheet, that, and others, that this led a lot of people to say that really there's no such thing as the next world, right? To really deny the Masorah and say, to be kofar in that Amunah, so the Torah doesn't really hold from the next world. And by Yesheni, that was, as we well know, that was a very big, problem they had with, I mean, nowadays we also have the Korsan. But in Baishen, there's a big problem. The Epicurean denied the existence of Olam Haba. That's why they say that Chazal changed certain nusach and changed things, say, Mina Olam Viad HaOlam, in order to be Motzi Milev HaTzedukim. But this has been a big fight over the generations. The Kofrim look at the Torah and say, it doesn't say anything in Torah about Olam Haba. That's just something the rabbis made up later. So, so we believe the rabbis don't make up things later. But Taka, it's a good question, why isn't it in the Chumash? And this is a question which everyone has tackled. As you see in this sheet, I just gave a sampling of Rishonim and Early Chronim, and the numbers, I didn't number the Makoros, instead I numbered the answers. Because, you know, people say the same thing, gets the same number. Obviously, yeah, you should question what's the same answer, what isn't, sometimes I put an asterisk. I have 14 answers here. This is the tip of the iceberg, you know, just from very, very classic Rishonim and super duper classic Achronim. And go, of course. I'm sure you could, you know, make a Shem Panam Latorah, Gvor Shmon, or Ne'er Lemay out of it, if you so desired. But there are a few answers to this, and some of them are more, you know, when it comes to answers, there's always two drachim you can take with answers. Sometimes you might get out of the question, sometimes you could turn the question into a vort. So there are two types of answers. Some answers which manage to get out of the question. Some answers actually take the question and, like, you know, teach us some new inspirational idea based on it. Obviously, you know, in our hearts we have more of a soft spot for the second kind of answer. But let's just look at some of the answers which the Mepharshim said about this. Anyone want to suggest something, by the way? Anyone know why didn't the Torah mention Olam Haba? It seems very strange. Like, it's such an important idea. It should be there in the Chumash, no?
Isn't it like a funny question, but something that like I would say historians and like I don't know if like when they like look at the Torah like isn't it a pellet to them like Mitzad like if you look like I guess contemporary like there was so much belief about like that you know the Egyptian pharaohs are like being like buried for like the afterlife and like the Torah like I guess even if like you hold up the kfira, you know like shouldn't it be a tremendous pellet to you also the Torah to mention it?
Right, that is true. I mean there's some you know up of course some will say well in the old days they didn't believe in the afterlife. That's just an idea the rabbis made up later. That's not such a posh historical idea. It's not like saying in the old days they didn't know nuclear physics and they came up with it later. Taka in the days of Yitzias Mitzrayim. I mean, lots of people believed in the afterlife. It wasn't like a new idea that they were Mechadesh in some later generation. So that is a good... I mean, it's not even obvious what the Epicurean should say.
Right?
Because, like, why shouldn't they have believed it, 3,000 years ago? It was an idea that people had already come up with by then.
Okay, so it's almost like the Torah's, like, begging you to dress it yourself.
Right.
Even if you don't, like...
Right, so that is a very good hara, almost like the Torah is purposely leaving it out.
Right.
You just got to figure out why. You got to figure out why the Torah is purposely leaving it out. All right, let's look at some of the Hasbeirim. I'm not saying that all of them will be equally satisfying to us. The Rav Sadi Yonim was for Deos. V'im Yomar Omer Hinei Lo Nintza Mashen Ibska Retorman Egmol Kim Bolom Azeh Belvad. Right? Why did the Torah only mention Olom Azeh? Fumash Shukasa Parshim Bechul Kosai Parshim Vayam Shema Tishmu. Nomar Ki Abor Lo Azvam Vilti Gmol Olom Haba. Of course Hashem didn't leave us without Gmol Olom Haba. Kasharan Rav Sidon Vare. We'll explain. Lo Hayim Afurish Bav Atzlach Olom Azeh. We're also Kim Shtei Sigos. There's only two reasons why the Torah Mefurash, obviously Bederach Drush, dealt with everything. Derech Drush, everything's in the Torah. But Mefurash only talks about Olam Hazeh. For what? Two reasons. He says, one reason, Olam Haba, you can figure out logically. Olam Haba, it's logical that a tzaddik should go to Olam Haba. Therefore, the Torah only hinted at it briefly. Everyone knows the drash, Chazal Saint Sanhedrin. From there, they darshan at all Shem Mitzvah Noach. Vaitzav means one, Hashem means one, and Elohim, and Allah Adam. And it's a very, very dachic kind of drash. Like, really? From that possible Shem Mitzvah Noach? So Rav Sadi Gaon says, Taka, why did the Torah just have this drash kolshu, Ram Hashem Mitzvah Noach, and not say, Hashem told Adam Arishon, don't do the big Averos? The answer is that's obvious. You should keep the. You shouldn't steal and you shouldn't kill. Therefore, whatever's obvious, the Torah doesn't focus on. So it's obvious there's an Olam Haba because you have a neshama, and when the guf dies, obviously the neshama has to be in the spiritual realms because it's a spirit. Therefore, it's obvious in the Torah didn't have to talk about it. Hashem only had to be mefarish. Don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. That's taka chiddush. That's Xeris Agassim. Who would have ever thought to eat from one tree and not from the second tree? Things that are obvious, the Torah doesn't bother to say. So likewise, the Torah only told us you'll get rewarded in Olam Hazeh. That's not obvious. Who says we should get rewarded in Olam Hazeh? As a matter of fact, many people don't. Right? That's not so obvious. But it's so Olam Hazeh is so obvious, the Torah didn't have to say it. Right, so that's the tricky part. I mean, there are lots of things. And he starts, you know, he says, doesn't say that Odom Rishon was told not to kill and steal, but in the Aseret Dibros tells him not to kill and steal. So it's a little dachik. The Ramban takes the same approach, but I admit it's not totally satisfying. The Ramban says that, I'll just read it outside, he says that, look, it's a nace that if you do mitzvot, it rains more. Right? That's a nace. That doesn't fit any of the laws of physics. So therefore, the Torah said, tell us, because that's a chiddush. It's not a chiddush that it should rain more if you, you know, that it's taka chiddush, right? That if we do mitzvos, then the enemies won't attack us, and if we do averos, then the enemies will. That's a chiddush. What does that have to do with the enemy politics, whether we do mitzvos? That's a chiddush. That's a nace. But Olam Haba is not a nace. That's natural that if you have a pure soul, it goes to a pure spiritual realm. So the Torah doesn't have to tell us. Again, it's a little dachik because, like, how do you know? Like, the Torah spends a lot of time telling us things that sometimes seem obvious, like this. Or Sadivros tells us obvious things. So it's a little tricky, I admit. Not totally satisfying.
The logic that dictates Shemesh and the logic that dictates Olam Haba are not very similar types of logic.
Correct. As a matter of fact, not to mention to us, like, it's not necessarily so logical it should be an Olam Haba, but like in the 21st century. Like, it's logical because, you know, it's okay with us because we know it from our Mesorah, so we're used to the idea. But if you just said, no, let's say you didn't have the Torah, wouldn't this be obvious? Like, I don't think it's obvious to going without the Torah. I'm not talking Christians. I'm saying, like, Mamash, a guy who doesn't know anything about the Jewish tradition. I don't think it's obvious that there's an Olam Haba, so it's a little tricky.
What happens after death?
What happens to an elephant when it dies?
So you're saying they don't believe in the Creator or any purpose?
I'm saying even someone who believes in the Creator, why is it so obvious to Olam Haba? Sudoku didn't believe in Olam Haba. They believe in the Creator. They believe in Hashem. They didn't believe in Olam Haba. I don't know if it's so. So if it's so obvious, then Sudoku shouldn't have denied it, and Chazal shouldn't have had lots of gemaras about how they fought the Sudoku about it. Right? And they shouldn't have some holidays and Megillus Tainus about fighting Sudoku about it. Okay. Let's go to number two, about Shanus. Shanus is interesting. It is a more historicist approach. Right? After all, what do the, what do the secular historians always like to say? Like all of these old texts, they're dealing with, like, the issues of their time. Right? So Taka, citing number two, says that might really be true. Vashenis, ki hanavua, at least in terms of the pshat level. Right? The difference between reciting the second answer and all the secular historians is that on the pshat level, he might agree. He just thinks that there's more than the pshat level. But on the pshat level, Taka, they might be right. It's an interesting question. Pshat of Chumash. A lot of things in Pshat of Chumash, we know all the most craziest Pshat Psukim in the Chumash that don't make any sense, we don't understand, are always the ones with, like, the best drushes on them. But in the Pshat, a lot of Pshat things don't necessarily make sense to us.
But they might make a lot of sense in the time and place they were given. Like maybe the Pshat of the Chumash was speaking to like 3,000 years ago people in the ancient, you know, Near East. And then all the things for the later generations were put in Drash. Not such a crazy idea. What do you say, number two? Vashenis. Nevuah really speaks at length. The derech of Nevuah is that it deals with things that are immediately necessary. It deals with things that are on the immediate horizon. Not with philosophical yisodos. The tikts of Ramar Chokim, things that are far away, it doesn't really talk much about. When the Jews got the Torah, what did they have to know? They needed to know what was the chap of them leaving Mitzrayim and going into Eretz Canaan. That was the main thing they needed to know in the Torah. What did he talk about? Why did the Tocha always talk about Ol Hazeh? Because it's talking about their immediate concerns. What were their immediate concerns in those days? He doesn't mean like, he means mamish immediate, not like in those days, like ancient times in the Near East. He means mamish when the Jews were entering Eretz Yisrael in that door, in that exact time and place, right? What was their immediate concerns? They needed to know how Judaism worked, what their relationship with Hashem in Eretz Canaan was about, right? Because it's different than the Midbar, different than in Mitzrayim, where they didn't have so much relationship with Hashem yet. So what does he have to tell them? In Eretz Canaan, these are the mitzvahs you have to do, and these are the avers you have to avoid. And this is how these mitzvahs and averos affect your existence in the land of Israel, which is what's right going on right in that moment. And therefore, what I talk about in the Tocha, it actually talks all about the land of Israel. Like, you could figure out on your own if you want to extrapolate that some of the things might apply in France also. But the Tocha only talks about the land of Israel. So that's all talked about is the immediate concerns. It wasn't worried with, the Torah wasn't giving you all the eternal truths in the simple pshat level. Now those you could darshan out. It was talking about the immediate concerns. Valkanis kilub mutter. That's why he talks all about rain. Uvamesh of parshas ki arts judge habasham l'risha loker tzrayim hi ad sofav ramza l'rach maimer k'tzas lo v'peirish harachav. That's why he talked about the mutter and the difference between Israel and Mitzrayim, etc. And all the things that happened a million years later. That it only talked about a remez in one or two lines. Okay, so it's talking about immediately that historical time. Another similar take on this is in, if you just skip to number 8, which is the bottom of this side, Kli Yakar says, also he gives a historicist approach. He says, what's the Torah coming to do? The Torah is coming, like, again, the Pshat level of the Torah. Obviously, LP Drush, the whole Torah only counts Torah with Drush, with the level of Drush. And that's coming to tell us everything you need for all eternity. But on the Pshat level of the Torah, he said it's coming to argue against the competition. Right? What was the competition? Nowadays, the competition is, I don't know, postmodernism, or this or that, I don't know what it is. But in the old days, what was the competition, of course? The Avodah Zarah, the Baal and Ashtarot, and all the Avodah Zarah they found in Israel, primarily. Right? Now, what were all the rituals of Avodah Zarah trying to do? Right? Anyone know anything about the Avodah Zarah they used to have in Israel in those days? What were all the rituals trying to do? Every time you went, like, they tried to tempt you to go to the base of Avodah Zarah. What did you think? What did they think would happen if you worshipped their idols properly?
It would be Moshe Shefa
Ben Elyon. It would be Moshe Shefa. Specifically, what kind of Shefa?
Gashmi, like rain.
Like rain and growing a lot of crops, right? And fertility. Like it's all rain and fertility. Like it's all fertility gods. Like that's what, I'm not such a bucky, but that's what a lot of these things. They all had to do with fertility, making your crops grow, etc. So that was what the competition discussed. When they tried to tempt you, you know, when they tried to tempt you to go worship Baal and Ashtarot in those days, what was Baal and Ashtarot for? You know, Baal was a rain god, right? What do you call a field that you don't need to water in Mesef Moikotin? Stea Baal, right? The Baal gave you rain. The Ashtarot was a fertility god. That was the competition. So says the Maharal in the Kli Yakar, number 8 at the bottom of the page. Hadea Chamishis, he brings 7 opinions. This is his 5th. Shekodek Baal Zatar, you ovdin chom mazolos, for you also have a bodus, you chodesh, you lahamshach, you have a brocha, but tvuos, you have a gisham, you eat them, you have a goch. All of the Avodah Zarah that the Jews were tempted by in those days, in the time of the giving of the Torah, was all to get rain and to get fertility and to get crops, etc. Shenasen Gosh Brucha Torah, menom and osam avodos. Then what Hashem gave you the Torah, it says, don't worship these idols. So what does Hashem need to do in that time and place historically? Right? What do you right? If you're doing Kirov, You can't talk about all the, you know, the highest levels of Judaism and all the ideas of Judaism. You got to start with, look, I know that I'm competing with this, so let me give you something that's just as good, right? If you're trying to get someone not to go out to whatever club, you got to give them something that's more fun than that club to attract them to Judaism. So that's what he says here. Hashem asked them. He had to promise her. She got like Yishmael Satori is going to Hello, don't worry. Are you kidding? You think you don't go to Baal and... Well, you know, what the people then, again, to us it sounds silly, but in those days they were really upset, like, I have the Torah, but if I don't go to Baal and Ashtarot, it's not going to rain. So Hashem says, no, what are you talking about? If you do the Torah, you'll get the same thing, it'll work much better, because it's true. Yes, Hashem is telling you, no, Adrabah, worshiping idols, takes away whatever they say they're giving you. Keeping the Torah gives it to you. And that was what was necessary to compete in that time period. He didn't have to promise them Olam Haba because even the Baal and Ashtaroth weren't promising Olam Haba for worshiping them. So therefore, that wasn't the main competition that Hashem had to fight against in that particular time and place.
That makes the Torah so mugdar to one time period.
Again, some of these make the Torah mugdar to one time period, but what you have to say is, so then why aren't you a secular historian? You have to say, no. And this is, I think, a very reasonable shot. I think it might be true. The Torah is not mugdar to anything, but it could be that pshuto shel mikra, the pshat level might be mugdar to one time period. It's not fair to say the pshat is talking to one time and place, and the drash is for every time and place. That's not so crazy. Obviously, a secular historian, you know, wouldn't believe in the drash, wouldn't believe the drash is authentic. But if you believe, no, if you believe the drash is authentic, right, the Gras says that the drash is actually everything that ever happened or will happen in the world, but at the very least, everything we all need to know. So if you really believe that Hashem gave the Torah with a level of pshat and a level of drash, then it's not so crazy to say the pshat is more for one time and place, more, not exclusively, and then the drash has the things for the other times and place. And Hashem knew when he gave the Torah that like the simple level would speak to people at that time, and then at later times they'd see the deeper levels, you know, and at each later time they'd see the deeper level, you know, that addressed the concerns of their time. But that's what some of the answers in the Mefarshim seem to say. They give historical... They give historical answers. If you look, I'll just do one more technical answer. If you look for a second at the Sefer Ikarim, he says, and this answer is found in a few Mefarshim, and they quote it actually from Ibn Ezra. So let's skip to the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says, first he brings all the other technical answer, Reinu Hai. He quotes the name of Hai going, Ki lo hutra chazal farsh dover olam haba here do about taka. The Torah didn't need to tell you about olam haba because they knew it through tradition. You know, this is like halfway touching on what Daniil said before, that they knew about Olam Haba because it was traditional. I mean, you could add, even the Goyim knew about Olam Haba in those days, right? The Mitzrim certainly knew about Olam Haba because, I know about the Canaan, but the Mitzrim knew about Olam Haba because they had all these elaborate rituals where, like, you know, they gave you all the things you needed to get where you're going when you die, and, you know, they buried people with all the Abizrim, with all the materials they would need to get through the next world. The Greeks also used to do it a little later. But so he says, they knew about Olam Haba, which again is a tricky one, because like there's a lot of things in the Torah they knew about through tradition, which is still in the Torah. Number three says, he says, the Torah is given for the masses, not for the individual. And Olam Haba, not one of the thousand could really understand it. It's very deep. Here he's saying something which is also like a little, again, it sounds a little radical. The pshat in the Torah, that's for the masses, and the masses couldn't understand Olam Haba. Nowadays, I think the masses can understand Olam Haba. But maybe that's just because we got used to it after thousands of years of Judaism and Christianity and Islam. But like starting from scratch, you can't say, oh, nowadays, what are you kidding? Like the masses in the Appalachian Mountains, they all understand Olam Haba. Okay, that's because for 3,000 years they've been practicing because they've had, you know, the Tanakh in their religion. But in those days, I guess it was like really hard for people to understand Olam Haba. And therefore, and the Pshat Hashem just gave the things that are easy for them on the level of the masses. And the masses can understand rain, and can understand fertility, and can understand peace and health. You know, but the things that are hard to understand, that Hashem only put in drash in the Torah, which is also a little funny. When he, like, Pshat in the Torah is only on the level of like pandering to the masses. But it could be, yeah. After all, masses know how to read pshat, and they don't know how to read more deeply. So the masses who know how to read the pshat, they'll get things which appeal to them on their madriga. And those people who are smart enough to know the deeper levels will understand the deeper concept. So these are just a few sampling of technical answers that people give for why it's not in the Torah.
So, Tchias Meisim, being one of the Yerkim Leikarim,
it's a little funny, right? That I guess the Rambam wouldn't have given this answer, because why make it these things in the Ikarim if the masses aren't supposed to be able to understand them? So now let's look at some of the more interesting answers. Obviously, we won't get through all the answers. You can take this home. The Sefer Ikarim, and it's also from the Sefer Ikarim, it's quoted in the Kli Yakar, number 4, has a very fascinating answer. He says, and he makes this into a philosophical yesod, which actually affects like the whole way like we would be Ovid Hashem, depending if this is true or not. This should have a big nafkamina. Number 4 in the Sefer Ikarim. Kasher yana b'yudim agash v'shinusim tor ech lechad. If we look at the promises, the Torah gives one by one. Here's an interesting one. Nimsar she'efshar she'yavob makom hu yudim ruchniyim. He actually notices that in the Torah, it would not really be possible for the Torah to have put spiritual, otherworldly rewards in the context in which the Torah put this worldly rewards. Why? Ki yudim she'esku b'torim sum kulum kolum klav ha'umba. Here brings the yisod. You ever read the Tocha? The stomach, many times. Right? What's strange about the Tocha, he points out. Right? Whenever you have two strange things, then already that becomes an answer. Number one, why is it physical and this worldly and doesn't mention Olam Haba? Number two, it's all tziburi. It never says if you're good, then you won't get sick and you won't get killed by gang wars and you will grow a lot of crops. It never says, it says if Am Yisrael is good, then they will have health and prosperity and rain and peace and security, etc., etc., etc. But he never says, like, if you're bad, a fire will break out in your storehouse, and if you're good, like, a fire won't break out in your storehouse. And if you're bad, then all your animals will die, and if you're good, they'll all have a lot of babies. It says, Klal Yisrael, if we're good. It's all very national. All the Tocha is national in scope. He says, and he says, hold on a second. If the Torah is giving... is giving Klal Yisrael dik, is giving national rewards and punishments, then it can't be Olam Haba. Because, Sha'afim Ti'umah B'Klal Tzadek is very L'chai Olam Haba. Yevshah Sheh Nomar Sheh Rasha Bar Yizk L'chai Olam Haba L'ma Chamisha Tzidim V'Sheh V'Kirba K'zei Yemishpah Mu'ukal Sheh Rasha Gomar Sheh B'Umah Zok L'chai Olam Haba K'tzedekut V'Hai K'tzedek Rasha. It says, in Olam Haba, we're all judged as individuals. There's no nation in Olam Haba. Right? He says, it's impossible. Let's say we're all good, but there's one big, big Russia, tremendous Russia. No way he's going to get to Olam Haba just because, there are good people in his city or in his nation. That would be a mishpah mukal. Olam Haba, Hashem has to give the final judgment, has to even everything out. And you can't have the same fate for the tzaddik and the Russia. In Olam Haba, everyone zoch as an individual. If you're good, you go up. If you're bad, you go to Gehenna. Right? Olam Haba is very individualistic. It's post-national. It's post-nationalistic already. Olam Haba. But, so if Hashem wants to talk about the nation, then the nation only gets rewarded and punished in Olam Hazeh, because the nation is only together in Olam Hazeh. In Olam Hazeh, if we're good, we have peace. That's for everyone. If we're good, it rains for everyone. If we're good, the economy is successful. That's good for everyone. So since the Torah didn't want to discuss individual reward and punishment, but wanted to discuss national reward and punishment, therefore the Torah discussed physical rewards and punishments, which apply to the nation, and not Olam Haba, which is on a pure individual level. And then he points out, actually, anyone know where the Torah does discuss individual reward and punishment? Very rarely. Only like one or two places. And even then, it's not so much. Says, well, Askar Prati L'Halech V'Echelo is Kiroso HaTorah. Torah never mentioned individual reward and punishment. Elam Kos B'Av, just in a couple places, quickly. Kamo B'Shaluch HaKamman Yitav Lach B'Arach T'Yamim. Right, Shaluch HaKamman Yitav Lach B'Arach T'Yamim sounds like it's talking the individual. And Davka on that Pasuk, what does Chazal say? That's goof of the Pasuk of Kfar Amr Hussein Uzal, the man Yitav Lach L'Olam Shukulu Arach, B'Arach T'Yam L'Olam Shukulu Tov, the Olam Shukulu Arach, and they have various proofs that you know it has to mean that way. Davka, the one or two half sukkim where the Torah mentions that individuals get reward and punishment, that's a clear remez to Olam Haba. But the main thrust of the Torah is not talking about the individual reward and punishment. It's talking about Klal Yisrael being one unit. And therefore, he says, why is Olam Haba missing from the Torah? Because, obviously, he's saying, it's not worth it, even though it would have been nice for Hashem to teach us about Olam Haba, it's not worth it for Hashem to start focusing on the individual and mention Olam Haba. It's more important to focus on the Klal and just be Meramis to the Olam Haba, the individual. Now, why is this? This is obviously, he's making this a big so. This is the question, what is the Torah fundamentally? Right? What is the Torah fundamentally? Everyone mistakenly thinks that the Torah is Hashem revealing the truth in the world.
No, I mean, that coincidentally, that's also true. That's not what the Torah is, not Hashem just giving you facts, being a professor giving a lecture. The Torah is a bris. The Torah is actually a bris between two sides. It's not just objective facts said by one side that other people can come read if they want. It's a bris between two sides. Eilu divrei habris says all over. Who is the bris between? So, we're generally, especially in our door, noted to think, it's between me and Hashem. This is the relationship. The Torah defines the relationship between me and Hashem. But that's not true. The Torah doesn't. Agav, it does. The Torah defines the relationship between us and Hashem. The Torah is a document. It's a contract. It's a treaty signed between Am Yisrael and Hashem Yisbarach, not between individual Mr. Schwartz and Hashem Yisbarach. And if so, the Kli Yarech says that it's mistaken the Torah doesn't focus on Olam Haba. Because that's individual. The Torah is not about how the individual, the life of the individual. The Torah is merames to that. But the Torah is about the relationship between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. That would have a big enough gemina if this word is true. Meaning, how do we lead our whole lives? You know, is the purpose of our whole life, is the purpose of us keeping the Torah, to, you know, for us to work on our relationship with Hashem, my individual relationship with Hashem, or to work on Klal Yisrael's relationship with Hashem? Obviously, it's always a little of both, but where to put the focus, I think, you know, in the big life decisions, I think the Sefer Yekarim would be hinting at an opinion here.
I said the whole reason was that only that there is no Tzibur in Olam Haba, so it's only about you.
In Olam Haba, it's only about me. But that's not what the Torah is talking about. The Torah is talking about us. We're not denying that there's no one's denying that the person has to deal with his own relationship with Hashem, and you know, there's great stakes. The question is, what's the Torah about? The Torah is secondarily hinting to the fact that I'm an Ovid Hashem, and obviously that's important, and obviously the nation is made up of individuals. But primarily about how Am Yisrael has to have the right relationship with Hashem. And we're all part of that Am Yisrael. That's a tremendous nafkamina. I want to mention at least one other very fascinating vart by the Maharal. Of course, Kedarka Bakodesh. If you look at the Maharal on side B, let's look for a second at 11, which I think is most interesting in my subjective opinion. Most interesting shot of the Maharal. He also makes a vart out of it. He says, because like this was such a strange thing that it's not in the Torah that you think there has to be a vart. Otherwise, it's hard to justify. 11 says, "Bezeh ki'in safek." Right? He gives five answers. Ki'in safek shatar shana shemus baruch utigin olam hazeh. He also discusses why Hashem gave the Torah. Why did Hashem give the Torah? That's interesting. If you read Mesilas Yesharim, it sounds like why did Hashem give the Torah? To teach us how to get into Olam Haba. That's what it sounds like. You know, to give us the roadmap, so we'll know the way into Olam Haba. Maral does not think so. Zek in Safik Shatar Shnasu Semi Shbaruch Hu Tikun Olam Hazeh says it's undoubtedly Hashem gave us the Torah to perfect this world, to perfect Olam Hazeh. L'Haisher Bnei Adam El Tachtas Atov, to teach people the ultimate good, Shu Tov Olam Hazeh, so they can be good in this world. And that this world should be in the ideal state. Hashem did not give us the Torah to help us get into Olam Haba. Hashem gave us the Torah. Again, he's not saying it's not important to get into Olam Haba. He's saying that's not what the book called the Torah is about. Right? The book called the Torah is Hashem's instruction manual, not for getting into Olam Haba like you'd think in Akdamas Yosharim. Hashem's instruction manual for perfecting Olam Hazeh and making it as ideal as possible. For bringing Olam Hazeh to its ideal state. Because if everyone does what it says in the Torah, then Olam Hazeh will be perfected. Right? V'zeh ki Hashem yisbarach boris Olam Hazeh v'Olam Hazeh v'achsar. Hashem created Olam Hazeh and it has a chisaron. V'vadei bo v'yisar. Olam Hazeh is imperfect as it's a hard and it's chisaron. Of Olam Haba b'shlim san asmo. Olam Haba is perfect. Olam Haba doesn't need us to fix it. We don't have to fix Olam Haba. We have no achrayus to build up Olam Haba. Olam Haba, Hashem already made perfect. That's why it's Olam Haba. V'im bo chisaron. V'ina Torah to'elos Olam Haba l'takinus olakachinus going on the Torah. The Torah is for the to'elos of perfecting Olam Hazeh. Olam Haba doesn't need it. The Torah doesn't have to fix Olam Haba. That's why Olam Haba is not in the Torah. Because, again, the Maharal is telling you Ashraf and Yisod here. What's the purpose of giving the Torah? Not to teach us how to earn rewards. Because then the best reward is Olam Haba. Should have talked all over about Olam Haba. The purpose of the Torah is not to teach us how to earn rewards. Taka, there are rewards. We do believe in Skyva Onesh. But that's not the purpose of the Torah. The purpose of the Torah is not to teach us the roadmap to get to our reward. The purpose of the Torah is to make Olam Hazeh a better place. Tikkun Olam, right? I know the reform, and everyone else likes Tikkun Olam nowadays also. But if you look in Leis, it's Tikkun Olam Malchus Shakai. They're half right. They just forgot the next two words. But Tikkun Olam means to make this a better place, not only that people should be nice to each other and help poor people, etc., which is half of the coin, but that people should bring Kvod Hashem and be Marbe Kvod Hashem and bring his presence into this world and act in the spiritually proper way. And therefore, saying we get a sod out of this, the Torah doesn't mention what we're going to get at the end. That's not what all these rewards. All these rewards are to tell us that the better we are, the more Olam Hazeh will be in its more perfect state. And then, of course, there won't be pestilence and wars and droughts, etc. Because once we bring Olam Hazeh up in spiritual levels, it gets more chef on the physical levels as well. But the point is not to teach us how to get reward. The point is to teach us how to perfect Olam Hazeh. And therefore, the Torah Dafka didn't want to focus on Olam Haba. It says, maybe the Egyptians already focused on Olam Haba enough. Maybe a little too much. Because the Torah is not about Olam Haba doesn't your Torah is about perfecting Olam Hazeh. And that's also a very, very fascinating Musar Yisod.
There are more Chazal that say that, like Chazal say, Lodi Ratorial, Kenegad Yet Sahara, and Barasi Torah Tavlin, and this basically comes from Mar Chazal.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Maharal doesn't make things up from TV. Rav Kook would probably say TV also comes from Mar Chazal in some sense. But the Maharal, in a very simple, direct sense, obviously is just try taking Mamre Chazal and trying to put them together in the right place, right? And trying to chop where they would apply. Okay, there's a lot more here, both in terms of technical answers and in terms of interesting Ashkafi Kisodos. That's just a little taste of, the different drachim to deal with. As an Agava, just point out that little chop that we had meanwhile, that sounded almost like fear, but it's probably really true, that it could be the Pshutim Mikros are sometimes more historically based, and the drash levels more eternally based, might answer a lot of questions. A lot of places in Chumash, and be the proper Dvar information to the upper horsim, as well as just might actually give you important knowledge. So that's a nice thing to recall, and there are some very nice service here. Next time we'll talk to Lineder about what's going to